Welcome, everyone. This is part 5 of 5 of the Powerhouse Learning Series. This will be the last in our series. Today, I'm calling it 26 Powerful Life Principles, and we're likely going to go just over an hour. So if you need to pause, take a break, come back a little later on, that's going to be just fine. There's a lot of information here for you today, so stay tuned, sit back, and enjoy what we have. Whether you're on audio or video watching the slides, we're thankful that you're here. And if you need to reach out to us, there is a place for you to go into info@powerhouselearning.com, and you can reach out to me or any one of our team. Powerhouse Learning was designed to give you a place to come for help with life's difficult challenges, and it's presented in both visual and audio format that will be easy to understand. It'll be jam-packed full of life principles today. And I'm going to speak in straight talk. I'm just going to give it to you straight based on the experience that I've had working many, many years in organizations and with individuals, helping them achieve their strategic goals and objectives in life and in business. Gears in a powerhouse are designed to give you the most power with the least amount of effort. You may have heard me say that in the very first module. And for me, that just means we want you to balance life's thinking ability and skills with your heart's discernment of truth. For today, take what works and leave the rest. If something bothers you, affects you, causes you to question what I'm saying, please go do the research. Get on the internet. It's a powerful thing. Look inside yourself. Find out where you need to do some work. And please do the work. Be willing to do the hard things to get the great result in life. Powerhouse Learning was created for those that are ready for the how-tos because you're tired of hearing instructors or speakers give you just enough and yet probably leave you more confused than you were when you came in the room or when you listened to the CD or whatever it was or you started the book. We're here to give you some practical answers today, and I'll likely leave you with some things to think about. So, like I said, go and do the research, be engaged in learning. It's probably one of the best things you could do for yourself and for those around you. Today, you can expect what I call orange juice versus Kool-Aid. And I borrowed that term from my mother-in-law. She's a wise woman. She's been around for a long, long time. And she says that there's two kinds of people. There's people who are like orange juice that are the real thing. And there's people who are like Kool-Aid, which are not. So today, my commitment is to bring you real life information, real life language, things that you can use starting today. I'm going to bring you some of my favorite life principles that have made an impact on my life over the years. And I'm going to bring you some original sayings from years of experience. I guess I don't like cliches very much. So as I've learned to be engaged with people and in organizations, I've come up with some strange, quirky sayings, and those will be demonstrated for those of you that are watching this presentation instead of listening to it with the little avatar here that I have called a Brandyism, and it's got a little quote piece. And every time you see that, you'll recognize an original saying that I've come up with to help me with a formula to engage with people and help them along their path in life. So anyway, that's what those are. Let's start with number one. We have a lot to cover today. Attitudes first. I say attitudes must come first and then behavior. Oftentimes, when we're looking at making a difference for ourselves or for others, depending on the position that we're in, whether it's at work or in our personal lives, we want to look at the behavior and address the behavior. What I find is that attitude is the posture of your heart and your mind in relation to that to which you aspire or the other person aspires. And attitudes determines our thoughts, our language, and our actions. Once you uncover more of the reasons why you have continued doing the same things over and over again, and then you can engage in a plan on how to break through it, you will see some immediate results in the physical universe. So when things aren't working out, look at the posture of your heart, your intent, your attitude, your emotions, and then you can focus on the behavior. Or if you're engaged in coaching or training, or if you're a parent working with your kids, focus less on the behavior and more on what's going on underneath it, and you'll get a lot further. Number two, I mentioned a little bit about how we are wired. At the core of us, there are beliefs that we have developed over time. They came through our life experiences, our personal faith, and even through the experiences of others. Now, I learned this principle many, many years ago, And for those of you that are watching the video, you're going to see a little guy here with a target right in the middle of him. At the very core of all of us are our belief systems, the things that we hold dear to us, even if they're unhealthy. The next thing is our emotions, how we relate to the thing that we believe in. And lastly, our behavior. So what I'm asking you to do again is take a look at your beliefs and how you relate to those, and then they have how they show up in behavior. One of the stories I often tell is that, and it's a fictional story, but let's just say when I was a little girl, I went over across the street to my friend's house, and he had a Cocker Spaniel. And that Cocker Spaniel, when I walked in, looked like it was a nice dog and everything, but as soon as I turned around, it bit me on the ankle, right? And so what is the emotion I'm going to have? Probably fear and anger and distrust and all those kind of things. And what is the behavior? Well, I'm going to move away from it, especially if I'm a small child. So let's just say years later, I'm dating this cute guy in school, and he invites me over to meet his parents and have dinner. And I walk in the door, and what do I see? A Cocker Spaniel. What's going to happen? Immediately, you're going to have an emotion around that experience, or I will have an emotion around that experience, right? And what's the emotion? Probably avoidance, fear, concern, all those kind of things. And what's my behavior? And if you know anything about animals and bringing energy into a room, dogs, horses, anything like that, you realize that you will actually end up manifesting what it is that you don't want when you bring that kind of energy. So it's very likely that that dog, if it has any tendency towards biting, will probably bite me again. And I'm going to blame it on the dog. That's natural. So I'm going to ask you to take a look at what are the things that are stopping you in your life. See, all of us truly think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Now, some of you say, now, wait a minute, that's not necessarily true. I react based on how people are around me or how circumstances are. And if that's your belief system, I will challenge that. Because we have the ability and the control within all of us to determine how we're going to react to circumstances outside of ourselves, outside of our control. So what are the beliefs that hold you steady in life's challenges? And what are those that increase your anxiety or stop you from getting what you say you want out of life? If you can identify those, you can overcome them. I promise you that you can. I've done this in my life. I continue to struggle and work on it in my own life. So I know you can. Identify the things that are stopping you, and then you can do something about it. Number three. Perspective matters. For those of you that are watching the screen, you're going to see a vast canyon with a river running through it. Looks very deserted and empty and dry. Well, this is a picture of an area close to where I live called Shoshone Falls. Why is it called Shoshone Falls? Well, I say perspective matters because from the view that you have on your screen, this looks like a desert area with a river running through it, and there's really nothing else. But as you look at the panoramic view, and so I'm scrolling now through that, you'll see this massive waterfall, this beautiful area where the Snake River comes across to an area that's actually deeper than Niagara Falls. That's what Shoshone Falls is known for out here. And it's absolutely stunning. Based on the time of year, you're going to see a very different view from Shoshone Falls in the spring, where all the runoff comes off the mountains, versus in the fall. It's the same thing with life. I think when we have enough life experience to realize that things will get better, things will change, life is full of adversity, and we can anticipate that and anticipate how we're going to react. This leads me to a piece I call Crossing the Chasm. I learned this many years ago. Most of us grew up this way. We're told if you do all the right things, then you will have what you say you want and you will be happy. How about this? If you do all your homework and get good grades, you will have a degree and you will be successful. For those of you watching the screen, you'll see me cross a big red line through that and say, this is a lie. It is. Because instead, I want you to focus on who you're going to choose to be. Are you going to be happy, be successful? Be faithful, be diligent, then you will naturally do or not do what you need to have everything you say you've wanted. Now, even though I crossed the one on the left out and said this is a lie, and even though I believe that it is, it's something that I grew up with. It was the way that my parents taught me. It's what our media really focuses on, is doing and doing and doing. And yet we know people who can never do enough in their life to be happy. And of course, we've all heard that there's different definitions of success. That's what this means. If I will be diligent, if I will be focused, if I will be content, then I will naturally move through the things that I need to move through, or I will omit things out of my life in order to achieve what I say I want. This remains a struggle in my life because of how I'm conditioned. And truthfully, some of my belief system is very geared around performance and doing. I'm very task-oriented. I love getting things done. I'm one of those kind of people. And I have to watch myself during the tough times. My husband says something very profound. He said, "Brandy, there's always plenty to do. Take a break. Let's go outside. Let's go do something else other than your focus on work and tasks and moving through a process." So just a little bit of insight on me. It's something that I struggle with, and I have things around me to help remind me of the right side of this equation, which is the being first. I've brought an example here on the slides of one of our clients, and I'm going to read it to those of you that are listening. He says, "I focused on times where I recognized that I needed to be in the being instead of the doing." And by the way, this was a homework assignment that I gave to this individual. He says, number one, during the weekend following our discussion, I focused on being a father instead of doing activities with the kids. I was asked to participate in a program for parents of gifted children. Instead of agreeing to spearhead the program, the doing, I agreed to lead the brainstorming meeting and create a direction allowing me to be accountable. I improved delegating reoccurring activities so that I could be focused rather than doing the tasks. Number four, I drastically spent time on being organized. Five, during our Wednesday office meeting, I focused on being direct so that I wouldn't have to do more meetings clarifying my goals. Number six, during this time of significant change, I am trying to be a leader instead of doing a push on each employee. He says, since I'm still learning, I'm not certain whether this is what you were looking for. However, if it is, I am feeling comfortable with the concept. I just need more time for true habit forming. And this is a fantastic example of how someone took the crossing the chasm piece that I just explained and implemented it into their life right away. Number four, what do you do when you don't know what to do? Many, many years ago, a friend of mine and I were talking about this, and I said, you know, I think there's two kinds of people. I think there's people who, when they don't know what to do, they either do something, like they just get up and try something, or probably like most, they do nothing. They get so discouraged because they don't know what to do that they do nothing at all, and they sit. And so we were talking about it and joking, and I said, yeah, it's almost like they need to be an alumni of MSU. And he said, what does that stand for? And I said, we just make something up. And this was probably back in 2005 or 2006. And what was so funny about it was we joked about it and I laughed and I was talking about MSU and make stuff up. And it doesn't mean to lie, okay? So I want to be really clear here. This does not mean that you lie, that you make stuff up to get your way to manipulate. It just means come up with something and move, right? Be committed and do movement. Get through the process. Try something. Open your mouth. Say something. Your brain will kick in. I promise it really does happen. Anyway, around 2007 or 2008, so somewhere about a year to 18 months after I had this discussion with a friend of mine and I was playing around with MSU, I was in Lansing, Michigan, and I was teaching a 20-hour continuing education class. And of course, as it was, I was flying places and getting off a plane and getting to a hotel or having dinner and then getting up the next morning and speaking, and it just didn't hit me until I went to dinner that night, and I see all this stuff, MSU, all over the place. And then, of course, I realized that Lansing is the home of Michigan State. So I brought back a bumper sticker and a little pin and a keychain that I still have today to remind me about MSU. What I want you to understand is there's a true reality, right, about fear and self-doubt. When we don't know what to do, many of us are afraid, so we don't do anything. So I have a little formula here for you. Number one, understand the true reality of emotions and self-doubt, that they are present within you. Recognize that you're doubting yourself, not sure what to say, not sure what to do, or that you're afraid. It's okay to recognize that. Remember that men and women experience the same emotions, they just show it differently. I know that's true. I know sometimes, ladies, we don't think men have emotions, but they do, and they feel the same things we feel. They just show it differently than we do, right? I want to give you some quick steps to overcoming fear, and I learned this myself years ago. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how scared are you really? How much are you doubting yourself or this situation on a scale of 1 to 10? And maybe you say, it's a 9. I am terrified. Or maybe you say it's a 5 or 6. Then I'd like you to think about and write down, what is the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that could happen? Okay, you could fall off the cliff and die, right? If somebody says, come on out, let's go hiking in the woods. And you think, well, okay, I don't like hiking or I don't like doing anything like that, but I'm going to go. And the worst case scenario is you fall off a cliff and die. Okay, so now that you have that knowledge, and this is the third piece, what can you do about it? What can you do to avoid the worst case scenario? Think about steps that you can take to help avoid the worst possible thing that could happen. Don't focus on it, but just be aware of it so that in the event during your hike, you come across a cliff or a path, you could say, okay, what I said I would do is I would stay calm. I would ask somebody if they've been on the trail. I would help get information. Maybe I would take a different path, whatever that is in life. So think about how scared you are. Think about the worst case scenario. Realize that that's very unlikely. And prepare your mind and your body to be ready in the event that you start feeling that anxiety so that you know how to MSU, how to make something up to move through it. The next slide that I have here says, what are you afraid of being known as? I believe that our own internal judgments about ourselves often stop us from moving, from acting. That's when we get stuck. We don't want to be known as a jerk or a pushover or being unreasonable or inflexible or unrealistic. And I have a few other expletives I usually use about myself. For many years, I was so afraid of confrontation that I would get physically sick. I would have problems, right, in my body. I would get migraine headaches and debilitated lower back pain. And any of you that have physical things going on in your body where normally you're healthy, it's usually a result of you holding in emotion. And I was one of those people many, many years ago. And so I had to face that fear. What was I really afraid of to deal with confrontation? Well, I was afraid of being known as this hard-assed, inflexible, closed-minded biatch, right? That's the truth. That's what happened for me. And once I went through the exercise I talked about previously where I listed, how afraid am I? What is the worst case scenario? Okay, this is what people are going to say about me. And then what can I do about it? Well, I can learn how to communicate in a different way. I can learn the art and the skill of language and listening. And that's what I did. And I continue to endeavor to work on those things now. Doesn't mean like I overcame it in one fell swoop. It wasn't like it was one quick, easy thing. It's something that I continue to work on. And I've gotten better and better and better at it as the years have gone by. So I'd like you to write down 5 internal judgments you have about yourself. What are you afraid of being known as if you were to overcome your greatest fears, your greatest doubts? I want you to recognize those things and then go through that scenario. I will tell you from personal experience that this has made a significant difference in my life. I'm willing to stand up, step out, tell people who I am, not be afraid of who I am. And frankly, if I do show up in a way that I'm embarrassed or is offensive to people, then guess what? I got to take inventory. I've got to be personally responsible for that. And I have had to be. But I'll tell you what, I'm a lot better off than I was many years ago, where I was so afraid of confronting or having any kind of honest conversation with anyone that I just lived in that kind of fear and pain. Number five, what I think about change. See, I say people really want to change. I know they do. I know we say that people don't want to change, but the reality is, if people didn't want to change, we wouldn't spend millions of dollars a year on diet programs and self-improvement material. We change multiple times a day. And it's not what's stopping us that causes us not to change. Let me repeat that. It is not what's stopping us that's not causing us to change. Like all the bad things or all the prices that we pay. See, we're too intelligent for all that. The reason that most of us don't change is because we're getting something out of staying stuck. And this is a piece that I call what I get versus the price I pay. Now, I want to be very clear. If you've had any kind of training about price versus payoff, that is not what this exercise is. In fact, this is something that I have created over the years to help people make dramatic changes in their life. So this is what I'd like you to think about if you're listening in. And if you're watching the screen, I've got a matrix here for you to fill out on a sheet of paper. And this is what it looks like. I'm going to have you draw two columns, okay? And there's going to be as many rows as you can write. At the top of the left-hand column, it says the price I pay. And at the top of the right-hand column, what I get. See, guys, if the prices we pay were compelling enough to make us change, no one would eat another piece of chocolate cake in their life, ever. Because there's nothing good about chocolate cake. And yet, there's everything good about chocolate cake. What is the price you pay when you eat chocolate cake? Well, it's full of calories. They're empty calories. There's very little nutritional value in cake. And don't tell me about the Bill Cosby piece about milk and eggs and all that, because we all really know better. For 1,000 calories, it's not really worth it, is it? And yet, what do we get? We get to eat chocolate cake. We have this love of chocolate, some of us do. And we love the taste of it and the texture and how it has makes us feel or whatever it is. That's what we get. It's the same thing with everything else in life that's stopping us. Look, if I were to talk to somebody about what you'd like to overcome or what you don't want to be doing any longer, they're very clear. And you know what else people are clear on? The price they pay. So for example, if it's procrastination or smoking or weight loss or embracing success, doesn't matter what it is, most of you can tell me what the prices are that you pay. Why is smoking not healthy? You can tell me that. Why is procrastination not great for your career or your time management or your efficiency? What about embracing success? Why do I not want to embrace success? What is the price that I pay? Well, you could tell me all of those things. That's the easy part of this exercise. The difficult part is, what do you get out of it? Some of you have heard, and it is true, that our mind is so powerful that it will not put us in a place to be worse off than we are. Our mind will not put us in that place. So even people who feel suicidal, or for women or men who are in abusive relationships, they stay because of what they get out of it, not because of the price they pay. This is a very difficult and yet life-changing exercise. This is one of the most powerful things I could ever share with you. And I have seen people overcome amazing obstacles by going through this exercise. What you need to do is sit down and say, what is it that I want out of my life? And start with something simple if you'd like. And then write down all the prices you pay for not achieving those things or for not moving in that direction. And then what do you get out of staying stuck? And what do you get out of staying stuck? So go through that exercise. It will be powerful for you. I promise. If you're watching the screen, you will see a piece here from one of our clients. And she took extensive notes and she went through 14 pages that she typed going through the price I pay versus what I get. And on your screen is some of her information. And of course, anything that would have been confidential has been removed. This is part of our coaching program in the Virtuoso Experience. And she talks about the parameters, the discussion that I had with her, some of the things that are her personal issues to address, the terminology that I've introduced, including committed to cause, which if you listen to the Powerhouse Learning series, you're familiar with that now. And the two matrices. And here they are on the screen, the price I pay versus what I get. So what she says here is, I want to be more other focused. So let me read some examples. This woman was very honest and it was very revealing for her. And she changed her life immediately as a result of going through this exercise. The price I pay for not being other focused. I put people off. I don't make my goals. I sabotage my relationships. I come across as the perception that I don't want something, so I'm misunderstood. I'm not listening, so I miss a lot. It leads to distance in my relationships. I'm lonely, I'm confused, I'm hurt, and I'm angry. Those are all the prices she pays for not being more other focused. So you see, geez, you know, why wouldn't she change? Well, because she's getting a lot out of it. She says, what do I get? And here's her list. I get to pontificate. I get to explain myself. I get to teach. I get to be right. I get to indulge in knowledge. I get to appear important. I get a sense and satisfaction of being understood, even if I'm not, and I'm resented. I get to live in hypocrisy and be an elitist. She says, I use run-on sentences to get the satisfaction of explaining myself so that I can feel justified in being right. And I get the satisfaction to explain myself so I can feel that it isn't me and they'll still like me. In other words, what she gets is to go on and on and on and to feel like she's sharing information and knowledge with people. She's playing not to lose, meaning she's playing it safe and she gets to withhold. And what she gets is to not have to be emotionally invested by being other focused. And it goes on and on. There's a couple other bullet points. Look, this is powerful stuff, guys. And I know it's really heavy as well. So I promised you that we would deal with very, very difficult, tough life challenges. This is one of them. This woman says she wants to be other focused. She's paying a price in her life. And yet what she's getting out of it will compel her to change more than anything else. She's going to realize that she's living in hypocrisy. Number 6, how I deal with fear. Fear is a powerful force, and if you've been held hostage by it, you know it is very real. Don't let anyone tell you that fear is not real, because it is real. Because the emotion that I have when I'm scared leads to behavior, doesn't it? And that behavior is very real. Whether it's posturing differently, it's not listening to your gut, all those kind of things. I know you're all familiar with a quote, or many of you probably are, that says, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the judgment that something else is more important than fear. See, for me, fear is very real. It's an emotion that I have, and often it will come with behavior that goes with it to keep me stuck in the fear. There's another great quote here on your screen that says, the brave may not live forever, but the cautious do not live at all. From now on, you'll be traveling the road between who you think you are and who you can be. The key is to allow yourself to make that journey. And for me, if I can see life more as a journey than a destination, it helps with the fear. Because when you're on a journey, when you're on an adventure, there's all kinds of things that are always going to happen. So, you know, you're going to miss your flight, or you're going to step off the curb and fall on your face, and people are going to laugh at you. And it's all part of the adventure. I mean, it's part of learning how to walk straighter. I don't know. I just realized years ago that if I would see life more as an adventure and not be so connected, not have my identity so connected with the outcome, that would be a lot happier and a lot less fearful. Here's another thing. If you can recognize what you're afraid of, write it down and do some research. That helps me as well. Knowledge will help me overcome my fear, because I will be thinking clearer about the steps I need to take to overcome versus having just the fear of the unknown captivate me. Number 7, 3 steps to reconciliation. Many years ago, I came up with this formula. It's a unique formula, and it helped me with a partnership issue that I was dealing with. I had been asked by the board of directors to come in and deal with some partners in a firm, and the board of directors had been working with these partners for 8 months, and they were still at a stalemate. So they asked me to come in and do some work. In less than 3 hours, they had broken through some of the challenges that they needed to break through to come to reconciliation. And a member of the board came to me and said, "What is your formula? In fact, we're going to assign somebody from our organization to learn your formula so that we can use it for ourselves." And I said, "Well, first of all, there is a formula, but you can't just take it and do with it what you will. You have to be willing to engage in the emotional side of this." And he said, "Oh, I don't know if we're willing to do that." And so, of course, they stayed stuck. But the two people that had broken through it as a partnership continued on their path to reconciliation for many years to come. These are the three steps that I have found that helps reconcile relationships. Number one is recognition, meaning owning what is so. What did you do? What are you doing that's damaging the relationship? Number two, accountability, meaning be answerable for your part. Just say, "Look, I recognize that I've been a jerk, and will you forgive me for being that way?" And the third piece is commitment. What are you going to do about it? It's very simple. What will you do or not do? I often tell a story about a CEO standing up in front of their staff or their team and saying, "I just want everyone to know that I recognize that I've been a horse's ass all year." And they look at each other and go, "Yep, that's what we say every time you leave the room. And you guys have a great day. You guys go on, you know, keep rowing, do whatever you need to do." See, the problem with this formula is you can't leave any of these parts out and have true reconciliation. So recognition alone doesn't work. Two out of the three don't even work. It's one of my secret formulas, and just like any other good recipe, it won't work without all the ingredients. Spend some time writing down and thinking about these three steps. You've got to go through the recognition of what's not working, owning up, apologizing, asking for forgiveness, and being clear about your commitment of what you're going to do or not do to repeat the behavior. And if you do, allowing other people to come forward and say, "Hey, I noticed you were doing that thing you said you weren't going to do." And then be humble enough. This is a tough thing, but be humble enough to say, "You know what? You're right. I get it." And the more times you're called out, the less likely you are to repeat the offense. The encouragement I want to give you is if you go through these three steps to reconciliation and you give people permission to call you out, be humble when they do. It's tough, right? Because our natural tendency is to be defensive. One of the things that I hate more than anything else in life is a sense of entitlement from someone. Someone feeling or sensing or believing that they're better than anyone else. We all have skills, abilities, and talents. What I find is a sense of entitlement to some degree underneath shows a large sense of self-doubt and insecurity. So just realize if you get some of that pushback, guys, if you're calling people out in the process, that they're going to feel defensive, you would too, naturally. Just be open to being humble and be open to realizing that this is a process to reconcile your relationships. Number eight, judgment. This is one of the Brandy sayings. We judge ourselves by our intentions and everyone else by their actions. We judge ourselves by our good, pure, perfect intentions, right? And everyone else by their dirty dog actions, all the things that they didn't do. Just be aware of the hypocrisy sometimes in that comment. I want to move into three big common mistakes that I see managers and leaders make in their organizations. I've talked a little bit about how to move from discussion into action through the C4A, right? I also want to talk about these mistakes that leaders make in building their teams. And it starts with number 9, called vision. I learned years ago to have a vision powerful enough to call me through the pain of transformation. And transformation can be very painful. It's change. I've got to do something different and step out into the unknown and face my fears and all those things that we've talked about earlier. But vision helps you get clear and stay clear about your purpose, and it'll motivate you in the toughest times because you'll know what you stand for and what you won't. When obstacles arise in life, go back to your vision. And if it doesn't help you move, then it tells me that your vision's not powerful enough. So go again, author your vision, make it powerful that it'll pull you through the toughest times in life. So on your screen, it says, what are you about? Describe at least 5 things that are the person that you aspire to be, the person you want to be known as. And that will begin the process for you of authoring your vision. The next one, number 10, is clarity. Most leaders are afraid to be clear, and they truly lack a vision to call them through that pain. In fact, over a decade ago, Fast Company magazine stated less than 10% of leaders felt fully adequate in the position that they're in. Has that statistic changed? I don't know that it has. Even with something declared, when you declare your vision, oftentimes there's no action. Why? Because we're afraid or we don't know what to do. So all of these things are connected, you see. Fear, self-doubt, the price you pay versus what you get, MSU, having a vision powerful enough, and then being willing, right? Being willing and then doing or not doing in order to have what you say you want. You see, I believe that we often forget all the good techniques we use with our clients or our customers. We're taught that asking great questions and listening to our customers or prospective customers is a great way to go, right? Because it leads them along a path and it allows us to create synergy in our business relationships. The challenge, though, is that we're often disappointed with the lack of results in our own internal team. Now, whether we feel like we have to, we're being compelled by another department out of laziness or disregard or unawareness, the results that we're getting in our team are our mirror as leaders. We must be willing to connect the two and practice what we're preaching to the outside world. And this requires a lot of study. It requires sometimes asking for outside help, which can be tough and yet very rewarding if you find the right synergy and the right partnership. So I want to encourage you to think about the techniques you use with your clients, what your mission statement is or your vision statement, and then take a look in the mirror. Are you living that within your own team, your own internal team? If you're not, there's a disconnect there. Your vision's not powerful enough, or you're stuck somehow and you need to find a way through it, whether it's through outside help or through getting the team together. Which leads me to number 11, feedback. When was the last time you did a team survey? And if you did, what were the dramatic changes that were made? If you can't tell me, then your team likely can't either. We know that statistically, a recent HR study showed that 75% of employees do not see value in these surveys that they take, whether it's for them, leading to positive changes for them, or for their organizations. So I talk about pink shag carpet. I say if you ask for feedback and one person says they want pink shag, well, we get them therapy. But if 25 people in the organization say they're looking for it, you'd better hire an interior decorator. You need to make some changes. Some people are open to honest feedback and others not so much. And when we work with top organizations, sometimes they don't know what to do with the survey feedback. They've paid a lot of money oftentimes to have an organization or a consultancy firm come in and do this big survey. But then they don't know what to do with the results or how to make those changes. Doing a survey is barely scratching the surface of what actually needs to happen. So if you ask and ask and you don't do something, you desensitize the audience and they stop participating. Let me repeat that. If you ask and ask for feedback and then you don't implement change, your people will stop giving you feedback because they don't believe that anything will change. And they will stop giving you the honest answers you need to do better, be better, and achieve the goals and the objectives that you're trying to achieve in your organizations. Our natural tendency is to blame someone else for what's missing. So when you get surveys, it's easy to look at those surveys and say, okay, who said that? What's that about? I've had this happen many, many times. I've had team leaders say, oh yeah, we know who said that and she doesn't count. I said, well, wait a minute. There's 4 other people here that said the same thing in a very small department. Are you concerned? No. They all have the same problem. I'm like, wait a minute. Something's missing here. You see, good leaders are learners and they're willing to do whatever it takes to bring their team along. And motivators are clear about what they are committed to cause. And they focus on committed to cause to help move them into the results that they're looking for. Good leaders also receive and act on honest feedback, and they see it as a valuable and rare gift. Honest feedback is something very precious, and if you have it, it's because you're willing to make the changes. And so I congratulate you if you're getting honest, true feedback from your team. Number 12 is listening. It's one of the most powerful life principles that I've learned, and it really came through a four-day workshop in 1996 that changed my life. My ears would never be the same, and neither would my heart. I went on to teach as part of the faculty of a national training organization formal techniques like passive and active listening skills. And one of the things that I want you to know is whether it's through the actual formal business training or through that powerful four-day workshop that I experienced, we reveal everything through our language. So go and learn more about people, about how they think, how they feel, how they negotiate their body language, and how to move people through a process. I think we've forgotten so much of that in a technology age, and yet people are the ones that are responsible for moving results. Back in the 80s and early 90s, our country was very captivated by motivational speakers that brought a lot of depth to us. And if I think about the old times of Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar and very powerful men, Earl Nightingale bringing information to us, and then Stephen Covey and Tony Robbins, we were engaged in learning as business people and also as individuals. And I don't find as much of that today. So I want to encourage you, my tip today is go learn more about people and what compels people, what compels you to achieving what you say you want out of life. Number 13 is a riveting math formula. It is expectation plus reality equals disappointment. Expectation plus reality equals disappointment. What that means for me is my expectation, it's my own personal expectation of how I want the world to look. And then when reality shows up, I'm often disappointed because I haven't articulated or communicated my expectation. There's a quote here at the bottom of the screen if you're watching the screen, and it says, I know how it is when someone disappoints you. It's tempting to see things the way you wish they were instead of how they are. That's why when we hear things like, hey, let's have lunch sometime. We'll talk then. 10 o'clock Monday? Great. We need to talk. You need to get your numbers up. We need to get the house clean. None of those things really do much but set up an expectation for disappointment because we're lacking by when. So by when fixes vague, ambiguous conversation into specificity will lead you to a lot less disappointment if you learn to use those kind of techniques. Let me give you an example. You know what I mean. Like you hire someone in your department and or somebody comes in as a new hire and you think they have all the credentials. They show up the first couple of weeks, the first couple of months. They seem smart enough, ambitious enough, and then nothing. All of a sudden, disappointment. That new employee is not performing. Please remember this important lesson. Our expectations are based on whose? That's right, our expectations. And they're based on our belief system, our filters, our way of relating to life, and they are ours. The other party has come into that situation based on what? Well, their belief systems, their filters, and their way of relating to life, not yours. Unless you sit down and create alignment through questions, listening, and agreement, you will have a lot of disappointment and busted ambition. And I see this in every department, and I especially see it with those that I work with that are sales teams, marketing teams. They are responsible for generating revenue and awareness for their organization. They often do not create alignment with their prospects or their customers, and they do not create alignment always with their internal team. So please remember the expectations plus reality equals disappointment. Number 14, guess what? It's also not always about you. I have a saying, we are who we are wherever we go. It helps me realize that not everything in life is about me. People have their own issues to work through and their own challenges in life. And I just want you to think about maybe that there are people going through really tough times at home, maybe tough times in their own business. Maybe they got some really bad news, but because they're working with you, they don't feel a need to share it. If you knew more about what people were going through, would you treat them the same way? Now, I'm not saying that that's licensed to allow people to be victims or to always have drama in their life or always have circumstances dictate their attitude. The other night, we sat down and watched The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. And if any of you have watched that movie, it's based on the true story of this man who became a single father in 1981, and he ended up homeless through real life circumstances, things that probably could happen to just about any one of us if all of the dominoes were to fall. And yet he kept showing up for work. He kept staying diligent. He kept doing whatever it took for him to achieve what he said he wanted. And there was no certainty in the outcome, right? After 6 months, he had no certainty that he was going to be able to continue with this organization. And yet he was diligent and faithful. And I think about all of the different things that happened in that movie and how he was giving money to people who asked him for money at that moment. It was his boss or it was one of the board of directors, and he didn't have the money to give, and yet he gave it, having faith that it would work out. And so I just think a lot about, we never really know what's going on for people around us and how important it is that we stay connected to the human element. Number 15 says, no donkeys. I say, take a stand, hold your ground. A donkey is a donkey. And if you're watching the screen, it has a picture of a mule with a bouquet of flowers in its mouth. This is one of the things that I do to help people and organizations realize that we don't have to deal with jerks in our lives, right? People have their own issues going on, but you know what? If they're total jerks to do business with or to be around in your personal life, it's not really worth it, is it? I mean, we're not doing anyone any favors by hanging on to that client or staying in that unhealthy relationship. Now, yes, I have definitely talked about looking in the mirror, taking inventory, pursuing your dreams, having a vision. And yet there are some people that are so miserable and unhappy that they just seek to make the place around them the same way. I know we're all working through our own internal issues. And yet, especially when it comes to business, I have worked with teams to create a code violation list of donkeys. We listed customers that had habitually poor pay problems. They had a poor impact on the morale of the team, and they used poor verbiage choice in the English language. They were just jerks to deal with. And in my opinion, no client is worth any of these heavy prices. No client. Set your standards to the kind of clients or customers you want, because they are indeed a reflection of you. Distinguish yourself in offering the best possible use of your team's resources to the kinds of clients you would be proud to work with. And code violators should be discussed in team meetings, and there should be action taken to create new agreements. Number one, go to those people and talk about what's missing in the relationship. What can we be doing differently? This is what we need from you, Mr. Customer. We need you to pay your bills on time. We need you to be pleasant in dealing with our team. Or number two, how to offer them an alternative to buy from another organization down the street. This counts especially for sales and marketing, because I know they get paid to bring in customers, and yet if the customers are not profitable for us, we should not retain that business. My question is, are you clear on your no donkeys approach so that you will see them coming and choose to respectfully decline to do business with those kind of people or to be in personal relationships with those kind of people? So just like we would have you go through an exercise on the consulting side about writing down your ideal customer, I'd like you also to write down the worst possible customer, the worst possible person to be in a relationship with. What are the kinds of people that you'll stand for, and who will you not? Now here's another story about donkeys. Donkeys are smart. One day a farmer's donkey fell down in a well. And the animal cried piteously for hours as the farmer tried to figure out what to do. He decided the animal was old and the well needed to be covered up anyway. And it wasn't worth any of the time or effort to retrieve the donkey, so invited all his neighbors to shovel dirt into the well. And at first, the donkey realized what was happening and cried horribly. And then to everyone's amazement, he quieted down. And a few shovel loads later, the farmer finally looked down the well and was astonished at what he saw. With every shovel full of dirt that hit his back, the donkey was doing something amazing. He would shake it off and take a step up. As the farmer's neighbors continued to shovel dirt on top of the animal, he would shake it off and take a step up. And pretty soon everyone was amazed as the donkey stepped up over the edge of the well and trotted off. You see, life is going to shovel dirt on you, all kinds of dirt, and the trick to getting out of the well is to shake it off and take a step up. Each of our troubles is a stepping stone, guys, and we can get out of the deepest wells just by not stopping and never giving up. Shake it off and take a step up. And the story says, remember the 5 simple rules to be happy. Free your heart from hatred. Free your mind from worry. Live simply. Give more and expect less. And there's a side note, by the way, the donkey later came back and kicked the hell out of the farmer for trying to bury him. But the moral of the story is, when you try to cover your ass, it always comes back to get you. All right, number 16. I have a saying, the seed you plant is the crop you get. This is a life principle and a faith-based principle. And I live around a lot of farm country where I see all kinds of crops grown in different cycles each year. We have corn, beans, alfalfa, you know, hay, wheat, barley, sugar beets, which are often used to sweeten the foods that we eat. And of course, potatoes out here in Idaho. And I listen to many people and organizations who talk about what's broken, what's not working. After all, I'm the change catalyst that they've trusted to help them break through. And sometimes it is important to face those tough realities. There seems to be a lot of talk and energy spent on complaining about what's not working, who's not doing their part, that they've had enough of the nonsense, all the mediocrity, the lack of accountability, blah, blah, blah. And years ago, I started thinking about this life principle. And some of you have heard the saying, you will reap what you sow. What that means is the seeds you plant is the crop you get. And what I find is sometimes people plant corn and expect green beans. In other words, when the corn stalk starts coming up out of the ground, they go, what the heck is that? That looks like corn. That's not what I planted. I'm this really nice person who cares about my team and communicates well with people and blah, blah, blah. And yet that's not what's showing up. That's not what the feedback is. It reminds me of the last scene in the movie Secondhand Lions with Robert Duvall and Michael Caine, where both of them, neither were farmers, of course, were duped into thinking that they had planted seeds of many different kinds of vegetables for their garden, and they labeled them faithfully at the beginning of each row, only to see corn come up in every row over and again. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It was hilarious. And it just reminds me of how life is sometimes. Instead of focusing so much on what's not working, try thinking about the best case scenario and begin working on that instead. Focus on what you can, and in my opinion, that begins with looking in the mirror to identify what you can do differently to get a different result or crop in your life. Number 17, why we don't stand. There are many prices for all of us. We pay prices. We fear consequence. We fear repercussion. We fear retaliation. We fear a tarnished image. We fear losing position. We fear looking bad, wrong, lesser, incompetent. And yet we trade those things for loss of respect, loss of agreement, loss of productivity, loss of camaraderie, honest feedback, and creative energy. And these things keep you from the authentic relationships you desire. All I want you to think about is taking a stand in your life, being willing to overcome your fear and achieve the things that you say you want in your life. It will be so worth it. And through this, number 18 is a strange way to build confidence. After coaching hundreds of organizations, salespeople, account service teams, their principals and leaders, I realized something, and it came through the testimonials. So if you go on to thevirtuosoexperience.com into our coaching and consulting organization, you will see some of the testimonials. And I realized that I was hearing a lot about confidence, that our team helped bring people confidence to make the changes that they needed to make. And of course, by doing that, they were getting incredible results. I realized that confidence and accountability are connected. And I thought, wait a minute, I don't really see myself. I know we've got great team members on our team that are so much better, maybe motivationally, than I am, but I couldn't understand the connection in the testimonials. And then I realized it. It's through standing with people, staying with them in the process, calling them out if they don't do what they say they're going to do, that they developed more confidence because they were willing to follow through with their promises because they knew that we would be there to say, did you do what you said you were going to do? And we didn't have to use it as a hammer. but we stayed with people to make sure that they were achieving their vision and their goals. That leads me to number 19, why people don't move into their goals. I say it's a disservice that we ask people to do something different when the way they relate to it is the same. What does that really mean? We ask people to do something different when the way they relate to it is the same. Which leads me to number 19, why people don't move. I say it's a disservice that we ask people to do something different when the way they relate to it is the same. In other words, you can bring in somebody to teach a new process, a new procedure, a new way of doing things, but you have to think about what's really going on in the minds and the hearts of the people that are being trained. Are they ready for the change? Where are they at in the process? How do they relate to the change? Are you talking about what they're willing to do and not do? Can you talk to them about the problems that they see instead of assuming that somebody else will come in and be right on the money? So I would say, talk to people around you about what they see needs to be changed before you start a change initiative. And you will gain a lot of feedback, a lot of information, and then design your initiative accordingly. Number 20, I say accountability is a cinch. It's a piece of cake. Look, I know managers and leaders want accountability. It seems to be one of the latest buzzwords. But staff and sales teams, they want to be shown appreciation for the value and how they contribute. You see, when you have agreement, you have accountability, but you don't have to use it as a hammer. So use your C4A to gain agreement and stay with people in the process. And please stop assuming that your team isn't human. None of us are solely motivated by money. In fact, if that were true for those of us here, we wouldn't have plateaued out owners all over the country. We wouldn't have so many problems internally with our organizations. And by the way, your salespeople and your marketing teams, they're motivated by recognition, by the recognition they receive from you, and even more importantly, by their peers. Give them audience to speak and share their experiences. Don't just have one person stand up and be the one who hogs all the time in the meetings. That's not productive for anybody. We all experience appreciation in certain ways. That's number 21. Years ago, Gary Chapman wrote a book called The Five Love Languages. And I wish we could have taken more and more of that and brought it into business. He says that we are all motivated, we feel and experience love in our personal relationships in five ways: through physical touch, words, acts, gifts, and time. Now, in business, we have to be careful about the touch thing. And yet, high-level hospitality organizations realize that tips increase over 40% when they reach down and say, "Sir, thank you so much for spending some time with me tonight. Thank you for allowing me to be your server. Thank you for sitting with us. Thank you for joining us," and touching the shoulder of that person. 40% greater tips. And there's many more statistics. The hospitality industry, really high-level hospitality organizations, have realized the value even in physical touch. Now, in business, we have laws against physical touch in inappropriate ways and words in inappropriate ways. However, we are all broken out into these five areas that Gary Chapman talks about. Sometimes in business, we talk about money, reward, recognition, public praise, and titles or importance. They're similar, but I'd like you to do some research on the five love languages in your time. And especially if you're a manager or a leader, realize that motivating people isn't really that difficult. If you want to find out what motivates someone, just ask. And you'll be able to understand that you have team members that are motivated in these five ways that Gary Chapman talks about, and that there are professional ways of meeting those needs, and you will see amazing results in your teams. Number 22, I talk about the hamster wheel. The hamster wheel is that incessant thought process that will not leave me alone in my mind. It's going around and around and around. It's something that's bothering me, something I'm thinking about, something I'm planning on doing, whatever it is. And I can't say that I've completely overcome it, but I'm better than I was years ago. I bring it up because it's a powerful life principle about not letting your thoughts run away with themselves. I work on what is in and what is not in my control. And I put aside the things that are outside of my control as much as I can and work on something that is. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one, but those of you that suffer from the hamster wheel, you know what I'm talking about. It's the thoughts that won't go away. It's the things that keep you up at night. If you're the kind of person that has a lot of creative thoughts, keep a notebook next to your bed and write those thoughts down. Allow your mind to get rid of those thoughts in the middle of the night to let you sleep. If you can't stand it, if you have to get up, write down the things that are within your control to do, and then really work on setting these things aside. Number 23, and we're almost done, having a formula for success. Every time I work with an individual or a group of individuals, I have a formula about what I'm committed to cause, about creating agreement, stating my purpose and being clear, considering the other, paying attention to that feedback, and using by when. Now, that's just my formula. I've done it for so many years that it's intuitive to me. People say, how can you walk into any situation and then move the way you move through a path? How can you stand up in front of hundreds of people and bring up different scenarios, take questions from an audience, and then always circle everything back around and have it make sense? Well, it's because I've created a formula inside of myself to move with purpose and with clarity for the sake of making a difference for others. And on your screen, we have a thing called the problem-solving matrix so that departments and organizations and parents, or if you're leading a group at the country club, or if you're a part of a philanthropic organization or fundraising group, you can use this problem-solving matrix to help you achieve what you're trying to achieve. Number one is, what are you committed to cause? Number two, what are the other people committed to cause? What's their name? What are they after? What is the issue that you're trying to overcome, accomplish, achieve, succeed on, whatever that is? What is the issue as they see it? So what do you see as the issue? And then what do they see as the issue? Is there anything missing? Are you lacking the promise, the commitment, meaning the follow through, agreement, or request? And then what will be done? What's your anticipated end result? And by when? So when are your start dates and your end dates? And if you're really interested, I would be happy to send you over our problem-solving matrix. That way you can have it for your own team. It helps make a powerful difference. Distribute it to everyone. That way we're all clear on what we're trying to accomplish, and it's in writing. Number 24, powerful life principle for me, is remembering the things that it takes to be an exceptional human being, to grow and learn as a person. What I believe it takes to be exceptional is courage, number one. Number two, to be clear, have clarity in your life, have vision, have empathy, which is a care and a concern for others. And lastly, perseverance, to be willing to do whatever it takes to achieve your goals and visions in life. Number 25, what we all want. I know that we all want to be respected, to be heard, to be treated with dignity, to not be playing high school games again, to be valued for the contribution that we bring, and to be esteemed as good people. The question I have here is, are you willing to give these things first in order to receive them? Number 26, we have just two more to go after this. Each era faces their own adversity. One of my favorite life principles of all time comes from a book and a series of books, actually, by Paul Stoltz, called the adversity quotient. And the bottom line is, how we face adversity is a very big deal. He says, greater than emotional intelligence, greater than our IQ, is our ability to withstand and overcome adversity. It's the number one factor for success. And I agree with Paul Stoltz. I would highly encourage you to pick up his books and read those and identify what are the areas in life that have you where you don't have it, right? What are the areas you need to work on? That includes number 27, which is opening up possibilities. If you're watching the screen, you'll see a paper clip here. One of the games that we play when we go out and we work with teams and organizations is we say, break everybody up into teams of four or five people each. So you're going to have multiple teams in the room and say, give us 10 other uses for a paperclip and you're going to be timed. And then of course, if you have any duplicates with other teams, you cross them off. And the team with the most amount of possibilities other than holding paper together for a paperclip will win a prize. this to me is just an analogy of why we need to be looking at possibilities beyond our first natural reaction. What are all the different things that we can achieve in life? What can we accomplish by seeing things beyond our first natural tendency? It's also amazing to me to hear some of the creative things that come up for uses of a paperclip, things that come up from team members that we never even would have thought of on our own. That leads me to the value in getting feedback from others. What can you do to achieve your goals and objectives? Sometimes it doesn't only lie within you. It lies within the wisdom and the value of feedback from others. Number 28, and this is the last one. Learners kick everyone's ass. That's one of my powerful life principles. Learners in life have a specific formula, and hopefully you've gained some of that insight today. They learn to listen, watch, and interact with others to check and relate to their responses. They pay attention, guys. They remain flexible to modify their behavior, and they use specific follow-ups I call by when. Clinton Anderson is a horse trainer from Australia, and he's one of my favorites ever. He's an exceptional teacher, and he brings information in a way that people can actually take it, go back home, and use it every day. And he has a quote, "Frustration begins where knowledge ends." Frustration begins where knowledge ends. And because I personally don't really like that feeling of frustration in my life, and I would rather have a feeling that I'm moving forward and that even though there's victory in the struggle, that I'm advancing my cause, I seek knowledge. I endeavor to be like the learners I know in my life who are always moving forward, always gaining information, and always seeking to understand what's going on with the people around them so that they can have wisdom and empathy. I'll end with this quote. It's just something to think about. The quote says, "I don't divide the world into the weak and strong or the successes and the failures, those who make it or those who don't. I divide the world into learners and non-learners. There are people who learn, who are open to what happens around them, who listen, who hear the lessons. When they do something stupid, they don't do it again. And when they do something that works a little bit, they do it even better and harder the next time. The question to ask is not whether you are a success or a failure, but whether you are a learner or a non-learner." So your exercise, your homework for this time, this last piece of our five-part series is, what are the items today that really bothered you, upset you, angered you, or caused an emotional reaction? Those are the items to take a look at in your life. Write down the area in your life you would like to work the most on, and then do that T-chart we discussed on the piece with chocolate cake, right? What is the price I pay versus what I get? Please be willing to do the hard work. It's tough, but it's worth it. And there is truth that lies within you, and the power to change is yours. Thank you so much for joining me for this five-part series, and I look forward to hearing from you. Please log on to powerhouselearning.com, and you can reach out to any one of us.